This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on sportsradio740.com.
Two here, Longshore McKnight, joined by our friend Travis Ryer, BamaOnline.com. Travis, good morning, sir. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing outstanding, basking in the glow over junior college women's basketball. I have been a fan of the Bucks this year, Travis. Catch me up real
Captivating.
Quick.
Captivating. Yeah, it was a great run for Madonna Thompson's team. Came up a little bit short out in Lubbock at the D1 National Tournament, but still a 36-1 record this year. Third place finish, 70-4 the last two seasons from the sophomore class. So check just about every box imaginable. And just can't say enough about the coaching staff, the support staff, and just the culture in general that they've created here off Highway 69 in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And
a program
that when you look around the rest of the country at that level of junior college basketball, a lot of European players, a lot of international players, I think people would be really surprised. They think junior college basketball, and they think it's mostly local kids that go to the nearby junior college and play a little hoops. No, it's expansive in terms of the recruiting, and Madonna does it predominantly with local kids, though. 10 of their 12 players this year from the state of Alabama, including the entire starting five. And that's the way she gets it done. And so a great representation of not only our area here in Tuscaloosa, but the state and region. And so we're going to miss it, but we'll still be hanging around, even though ours is moving on, and look forward to seeing Shelton State capture that first national championship here in the next couple of years.
Man, that is fantastic. I know you're very proud, very excited, and a little sad that coming to an end, but as you mentioned, certainly going to still be very much a part of it. So, man, really appreciate you sharing that with us. Yep. Now, of course, the big another big topic of conversation, Travis, I think this happened since we last spoke, was the injury to Tua Tagovailoa. Your thoughts, how it all played out, how it will play out from this point on?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting beginning today when they get back out there on the practice field to see exactly what Tua is doing after not seeing him for a couple of days now, and how he progresses through the spring, because there's sort of been conflicting reports out there about his availability as we move deeper into this. But it was thought to be his thumb initially. At least that's what we heard from Nick Saban a week ago today. His father then tells a television station in Hawaii that it's actually an index finger that he had to have surgery on. Who knows at this point? We know he's been working with a glove on that left throwing hand, still been taking reps in the things that he can do out there on the practice field. And so I don't know if it's really going to alter things all that much in terms of the big picture at the position, but it certainly made for an interesting storyline for the here and now.
It has opened up reps for, you know, Mac Jones and all of that. As we look in the again, they have not done a lot. I mean, it's just shorts and helmets basically as they get back into it. As we look at it now, the real prime positions of competition, where are they, Travis? What are the ones that that I'm not saying necessarily need to be competed for, but the ones that should be the most hotly contested, where players may be evenly matched competing against each other?
Well, I think there's the obvious, the defensive secondary, just because you have so much to replace back there. There's opportunity aplenty for safeties, corners, sub defensive back personnel alike. So you know that's the primary focus on the defensive side of the ball. You know, whether it's Trayvon Diggs and junior college transfer Savion Smith, Shai Carter, Nigel Knott, those guys at corner, and then at safety, Deontay Thompson's back after seeing significant playing time in the college football playoff. But you need another guy or two. You need three safeties. You really need, in this era of the passing game being what it is, on the offensive side, you've got to have three corners that are a starting caliber at least, and you need three safeties because of how much nickel and dime that these teams play, these defenses play these days. So, you know, when we mention those corners, those are some of the obvious candidates, although they have three or four coming in this summer as true freshmen, that a couple at least are going to have a great opportunity to get on the field very quickly. At safety, Xavier McKinney to go along with Deontay Thompson, maybe Daniel Wright. I think Jared Maiden is a guy who's capable of cross-training between safety and corner. So those are sort of your prime candidates right now. But that's the obvious area. But I think there's some areas that maybe you look at and you see, well, like the offensive line, four returning starters. So really you're just looking for one guy, and that one guy is going to be a big one because that's who's going to have to replace Bradley Bozeman at center. But I think they have accumulated enough quality, high-quality players, especially at the tackle spot, that there's still competition at more than one spot up front on that offensive line. Matt Womack's out for the spring at right tackle, so that's giving Jedrick Wills an opportunity to step in there as a second-year guy with the first group. Alex Leatherwood, going into his sophomore season, such a talented young player. Nick Saban has talked about the possibility of him being able to play a position other than tackle. So, again, that's one area that you look at and you think, well, they're pretty well set there. If Ross Pierce-Baker can jump in there at center and then they backfill with a left guard. But in an effort to really get their five best on the field, you know, it's possible we'll see more than one new starter up front on that offensive line.
Travis Ryer joining us here this morning on our Dreamland Barbecue guest hotline. Obviously, the coaches at Alabama get paid very well to teach, coach, mentor these young men, keep them motivated. And I would think, Travis, in the offseason, one of the biggest hurdles or coaching jobs that will take place is motivation. Obviously, you're coming off a national championship. You look at the schedule that's ahead of you, and you are a favorite in every game as of this moment. Saw some lines out of Vegas. Alabama is a double-digit favorite right now in every game on their schedule. Their opener, over a three-touchdown favorite. The game against Auburn in Tuscaloosa, a team that beat Alabama last year, they are almost a two-touchdown favorite. These young kids see that, they hear it, they know it. To me, that would be one of the more difficult things, to just not get them too high on the hog, thinking, wow, man, look at us. You know, we're going to beat everybody we play. And, you know, looking at the schedule, I'm kind of wondering, wow, where is the big roadblock? How about through the summer months, just keeping you focused?
Yeah, and that's where they've typically benefited from having that marquee matchup to open the season. But even the game with Louisville looks like a washout. You know, when you're talking about, I haven't seen that line of late, but I think it's somewhere in the mid-20s.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Alabama's favored over Louisville and Orlando, so you don't even have that tool in your box to sort of work with this time around, like you had just as recent as the last offseason when that thought to be huge matchup with Florida State and Atlanta was looming. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go about that. I do think that's where, though, having an overhauled coaching staff can help too. You know, I think maybe that isn't exactly what Nick Saban had in mind. As he said a week ago today, it really wasn't his desire to revamp his coaching staff. It's kind of thrust upon him, but it could be, a positive to come from it all. Adding the younger guys and perhaps some more juice to that coaching staff is going to be a good thing in helping drive this team through an offseason in advance, again, of a slate, as you pointed out, doesn't on paper in late March look to produce much in terms of resistance. Although, you know, I think that Auburn loss, though, is probably going to be the rallying cry in the weight room and on the television screens and things like that, because this team wasn't perfect. you know, in 2017. And I'm pretty sure Nick Saban will continue to remind them of that.
Travis, in your experience, is spring really a time for movement in special teams? Without J.K. Scott now, without Andy Papanastos, is spring set up to identify replacements there? Will there be any progress made in those searches during spring?
Yeah, I mean, you've got Skylar DeLong coming in as a highly regarded punter recruit. So the hope, if not the expectation outright, is going to be that he steps in for J.K. Scott. Is it realistic to think that this guy, this young punter, is going to come in and do what J.K. Scott did back in 2014 as a true freshman? Well, I'll have to see that before I believe it, because J.K. Scott was as good as a true freshman 4 years ago as he was as a senior in 2017. In other words, they just don't come along that often in terms of being so good so early, even at the specialist spot. So we'll see how DeLong transitions into that spot. It's a big spring for Joseph Bolivis, the 2017 kicker signee, in that Austin Jones, the Temple grad transfer, is on his way from Philadelphia this summer. A guy who has extensive experience on the FBS level. So Bolivis really needs to make a strong impression over these 15 practices this spring and try to give himself a leg up, so to speak, on that job before Jones hits campus. Because I think if there's any question about Bolivis' ability to get it done on field goals and extra points, that decision to go with Jones is probably going to be made pretty quickly.
Travis, other big news that has happened in the last week, reports that Alabama is in talks with Notre Dame and Texas about home and home games in football. We've talked a lot about scheduling and home. How close do you think that is to actually happening?
It's probably pretty close, at least with a couple of those. You know, something with the 2020 opener has to be coming down pretty soon, you would think, based on the timing in which we've seen in the past when it comes to those games. And you know, it's no, I don't think it's any coincidence. When you look at the neutral site, non-conference home schedule in 18 and 19, it absolutely makes sense that we're hearing talk about potential upgrades, because, you know, you open with a Louisville team, sans Lamar Jackson, in Orlando coming up. I don't think that's got anybody's pulse rate up, you know, in any corner of college football. And then if you look at Duke next year in Atlanta, yeah, I think we need to talk about some upgrades to the schedule for the future. Not that perhaps, you know, you'll get maybe you'll get Notre Dame and or Texas in a time frame in which they're somewhere around 20, 21, 22. Typically, they're a little farther out than that. But, you know, it's needed. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No, not at all. I agree. We've talked about it so much. Just refreshing to see that a couple of teams that have been mentioned are two that I think Alabama fans would like to see, like to go to Austin and to South Bend. So if that does certainly happen, I think that would be exciting. And you mentioned the, I guess it's 2020, there doesn't seem to be a Power 5 non-conference opponent yet. But I just happen to be looking around some other teams' schedules as well, Travis. And I just happened to notice that Southern Cal, besides their annual game with Notre Dame, doesn't really have anybody of value outside of the Pac-12 as well. So I don't know, maybe that could be a matchup, say, in Dallas one more time before the home-and-home series gets going. We'll see.
Yeah, that sounds about right for 2020. Again, something's got to come out, you would think, pretty soon in that regard, and that would definitely make sense.
Travis Ryer, BamaOnline.com, here with us today. Big game down in Montgomery tonight. The Capital City Classic taking place at Riverwalk Stadium. Alabama kind of limping into this game. Travis, the baseball hasn't really been going too well. What about tonight's game going up against Auburn? Of course, Auburn dropped 2 of 3 in their last series as well. But, boy, Alabama not off to a great start.
Not at all. 1-5 in the league. Surprising aspect of that has been the offensive standpoint, especially in this latest series sweep at the hands of the Tennessee Vols up in Knoxville over the weekend. And the one thing you thought Brad Bohannon in his first year as Alabama skipper would be able to sort of lean on were the bats. And, again, over the weekend in Knoxville, that certainly wasn't the case. So, you know, Alabama to have any chance to contend for, you know, a spot in the SEC tournament is going to have to get it done at the plate. And, oh, they have the people to do it. It just wasn't a good stretch up in East Tennessee for sure. So we'll see how they respond. They've lost 5 straight. They need a win of any kind, whether it's Auburn or anyone else in the midweek. Doesn't really matter at this point. They need to get off this snide. And this hasn't necessarily been a game that's been very good to Alabama. So we'll see how they respond down in Montgomery tonight.
Outstanding stuff, Travis. As always, we appreciate it. It's BamaOnline.com. How do people sign on?
Just go to BamaOnline.com or Alabama.247sports.com. Either way will get you to us.
Man, great stuff as always, Travis. Really appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Travis Ryer, on our